The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Doing my version of the Mr. Spock mind meld. Not Dr. Spock, Mr. Spock. The old television series Star Trek. The ultra-rational Vulcan. That's because he was so dominated by his emotions that they had to reverberate back and become ultra-rational. I'm an elite member of Catholic Media's SWAT team, S-W-A-T, Stopping Whining and Tantrums. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. The program, The Doctor Is In, dispensing a potent drug, Doc Is In. Very potent. No longer do you have to get it in brand form. You can get it in generic. It came out in generic about 2 years ago. It is tricyclinol. Very good for Wistad syndrome, Bradus majoris, acute or chronic type. Puts the parent in charge. Now, if you have questions about kids, questions about life, questions about circumstances, questions about faith, questions about yourself, questions about some other people, 877-573-7825, 877-57 equal. That's the number to get onto the program. And I have been told by a number of email. I'm getting so nervous. E-person. Can't even say son anymore. E-people. E-per sibling. I don't know, but man, you got to watch out. So, ever notice that? We're getting punished now for language instead of actions. You can do a lot of actions that the culture says are okay because the culture defines them no longer as sins. But you got to watch the words you use. Those words can change on you, and they can change fast, and you don't even know what you said. So you be very careful. 877-57 equal, and as I said, I got emails that people said, I didn't understand what you meant with equal. 877-57 equals what? No. Equal is the spelling of the last several digits. The last five digits. 877-EQUAL. That's what it spells. 877-573-7825. If you would like to get onto the program. You expect me to be perfect. Now, that is a common comeback from adolescents and teenagers to parents when the parents hold them accountable for something they did. You expect me to be perfect. Well, yes and no. Don't I sound like a shrink? Yes and no. Yes, I do. In the sense that the standards are perfect standards. In other words, if I do not want you to yell, scream, put down your brother at all, well, that's a perfect standard. I can't say, I don't want to worry about perfection here because, well, all right, I'll tell you what. You can scream at him once a day and once a week you can push him down and punch him. You know, I don't want to expect perfect standards here. Or if you don't want your child rolling her eyes at you. At all. Zero. Well, that's really a perfect standard. No rolling eyes. Now, in that sense, in a lot of things, you expect your child to be perfect. I'd like you to make your bed in the morning. Every morning. That's my standard. It's a perfect standard. Morning, bedtime, making. However, you understand that they're not going to make that. The daughter is going to do things to hurt her brother, and beds aren't going to get made, and eyes can be rolled depending upon the emotions. All right, that's the no part of it, which is my standard is solid and it's high. I recognize reality. You will not live up to the standard all the time. I got that. So I will hold you accountable. That's when the kids go, you expect me to be perfect. What they're really saying is, most of the time, in my opinion, that is, I do what I'm supposed to do. So you need to overlook those times that I don't. That's what it is. Okay, yeah, all right, I admit I pushed him down, but I don't do that very often. What do you want, perfection out of me? That's not going to happen. I recognize that's not going to happen. So I'm going to have to hold you accountable for when you don't do it. You expect me to be perfect is really a way to say, don't discipline me, don't hold me accountable, don't make me be responsible for when I do things that are wrong. Ooh, I don't know about wrong or not, but when I do things that, see, I can't use the word wrong. That's a value judgment, isn't it? Wow. Then I do things that are inappropriate and unacceptable. Therefore, you have to give me some leeway. Maybe 12%. 12% below 100% perfection. Now, there may be those people thinking, well, that's kind of ridiculous because no kid is going to achieve perfection in their conduct, as is no adult. We're all sinners. Got it. Somebody better tell Jesus that. He said you must be perfect even as your heavenly Father is perfect. But wait, Jesus, that's not, now come on, that's not a standard I can live up to. Why are you saying this? Because he's saying that's what you strive for. You reach for that standard. You know you're not going to get there. Obviously, Scripture talks about you not getting there all over the place. But the standard is in place. If I don't want you watching sewage TV, well, then that's my standard. No, zero sewage TV. That's perfection in reverse. No sewage TV. Well, okay. You can watch one disgusting hip-hop video and that one show on Netflix that is really putrid. You can watch half of that. Because I don't want to get into this perfection thing, you know. I don't want to have these standards that are a little too rigid, a little flexibility in them. You know, if you're not allowed to be disrespectful to your mom, that's kind of a rigid standard. No disrespect. Speak with respect. All right, so I've got to decide how much I have to allow you to do that is nasty, but that would be below perfection, but not out of control. So where's that balance? Maybe it's 82. You expect me to be 82% perfect. Because did you notice that whenever a child is disciplined for something, especially the older kids, and they say, you expect me to be perfect, it doesn't matter that you have allowed them to get away with stuff. Let's say, in fact, you do allow her to roll her eyes at her mother, which is disrespectful, but you allow it. Okay, you don't say anything because, well, she's not cussing her out. Okay, then why is she still accusing you of expecting her to be perfect? Because you've already slackened your standards. You see the point here? The point is that's going to be thrown at you no matter how sloppy your standards, no matter how much you don't expect them to adhere to a standard, no matter how much room you allow for disrespectful behavior or nasty behavior or hurtful behavior or irresponsible behavior or immoral behavior. You allow room for that. When you finally say, I'm going to discipline you for this amount of it, you could anyway still get accused. You expect me to be perfect. Now, when you folks call in here, I'm going to do the best I can to give you some type of guidance, some kind of thought, a nugget or two you can use. No therapy. Don't expect me to be perfect. I could be off. I could miss it. 877-573-7964. Well, no, that's not the number, but I didn't want to be perfect on the number. You people expect me to be perfect when I give out that number. All right, here's the actual number, but don't expect me to give it out accurately every time. 877-573-7825. There. Perfection.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The state has responsibility to orient things, but they can't take over the rights of the family, like in China, to have one child and that's it. It's a disaster over there. How many tens of millions of abortions have gone on? And one of the things that as a result of that is because of the preference to have boy children rather than girls, you have for every 1,000 boys, there are 850 girls. This is a great imbalance. Same thing is going on in northern India. So this is where the government cannot take away the primary and inalienable responsibility of married couples and families. And they cannot employ methods which fail to respect the person and fundamental human rights, beginning with the right to life. The government cannot force you to kill innocent human beings and still be a humanistic government. It's an evil government.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live.
I've been accused of talking on too much. I'm going into a support group next week for people, particularly radio hosts, who use too many words. Okay, the group is On and On Anon. Good to have you with me. Dr. Ray Guarendi, raising your IQ with every segment. 877-573-7825. Let's go help Beth. You see, I got this soft spot for young moms. Young moms who are facing for the first time in their lives having to consistently, relentlessly discipline a child to rule their will, and that makes you feel bad. There's nobody else in your life that you do this to. You don't have to do this to other people. You don't have to step in, guide their behavior, put consequences on it, and then watch them be upset. Now, what kind of relationship is this? Can't we all just get along? Kumbaya. Michael, row the boat ashore. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Dr. Ray. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Is this your first child, dear?
Yes, sir.
So, this is, okay, this is your first child that you've actually had to start putting limits on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like don't grab the dog, don't kick during diaper changes, stuff like that.
And he's just not getting this.
No, I can't believe how many timeouts he's had over the last 7 months for the same thing.
How immature. Oh, can't believe it. Okay. Well, let's ask a couple questions here.
Sure.
A 22-month-old, just because he is 22 months old, misbehaves, if you want to just say objectively, 10, 20, 30 times a day, probably, right?
Minimum.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I know that you do not put this little guy in timeout 10, 20, 30 times a day. You don't. Nobody does.
Some days. Some days he's had 30. But
it feels like it. It feels like there's no way, honey. You realize how many 30 is? I mean, with the most follow-through clients that I have, if they hit 5 a day, that's really high. That's off the charts.
But I'll tell you what. We do way more than 5.
Okay. But then here's the second question then. All right? If you do way more than 5. Does he stay there? Does he stay there?
Not usually.
Okay. Then you just, there it is. You are not doing timeout. You're doing nothing.
Okay.
What kind of timeout is this if you put him there and he doesn't stay and he fights it?
Well, I have to stay behind him. He used to stay in his chair sometimes, but he's decided he's done with that. And so we've tried to move on to the corner. And he did well at first, but now he's decided he's going to go out. If I stand, he flops. And
Do you have a playpen or a crib?
He's got a crib way back in his room. He's a little big for a playpen.
Okay. Can he climb out of his crib?
Not yet.
Okay, put him in there.
Okay.
Now,
I'll just
make sure he's safe. You know, drop the mattress as low as you can. And with one of my children, we put the net. You know, you can buy those nets over the crib. Because he was particularly tough that way. He didn't climb out of the crib. He chewed his way through the bars. So he was a little tougher kid. But you see, Beth, you answered the question, and this is why, okie dokie, this is why people will say, I've been doing this for 7 months. The child is not getting any better. He is obviously strong-willed. There's something going on here with this child because we're very consistent. We discipline more than anybody else, and he's just getting more resistant. And it seems inexplicable, but you see what I did there? I just asked you two questions. And on the second question, you got an F. The F was, what kind of timeout is this that you have to hold him there, or that when you leave, he's going to get away? That's no timeout. So when you say,
I've been wasting 7 months.
Yes, you have. You truly have. If you would have done this at the beginning, if you would have said, no, and you're not allowed to say no, by the way, but I give you permission to say no. If you said no, and then you put him right in his crib, your timeouts would work. Right now, y'all, you could have used the steps, you could have used the corner, you could have used the couch, you could have used whatever you wanted. It would have worked. But what happened in the last 7 months is as your little guy got older, got a little feistier, got a little more, I'm going to do it my way, he just decided, I don't have to put up with this. Don't do this. I have more energy in my little finger than you have in your whole body, mother. So don't try to control me. Now, that's just normal stuff. That's not strong-willed stuff. That's just a kid. That's a little kid. Okay?
Yes.
So you can do that. I remember the first time I put my son, he was 15 months old, I sat him on the steps. He looked at me. Like, what the heck is this? What are you doing? But daddy made it very clear he was going to have to stay there. And so we never really had any trouble after that because he realized really young, really early, that this is not an option for you to get up. You can't. And so that worked for him. Some of the other kids are a little tougher. Like I say, Peter chewed his way through the bars. But short of that, what you got to do is you're going to have to make it stick. Once you make it stick, okay, then you'll be able just to say, sit on the steps, please. And keep the other thing, too. He's young. He's really young. You know, this is not a 3 or 4 year old. This is a 22-month-old. So he's still pretty young. And the idea of if I do X, mom's going to do Y, takes a little while to sink in. It's not, it's like, he's not as smart as a dog. Let's put it that way. You know, dogs are just easier to train. They would be trained by 7 months. All right. Not to pee in your house. Your son can pee in your corner, and that's the way it was. We had one of my kids. We adopted him. He was 3. And this happened when he was, I don't know, just shortly after adopting him, or maybe when he was 4. He was in the corner. He said to my wife, I have to go to the bathroom. Can I go to the bathroom? She said, okay, James. So he did. Pretty literal.
Yep.
That's what he thought of our punishment. This is what I think of what you're doing to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's the key, Beth. That is the key.
All right.
If you make that happen, you won't need 7 more months of this. You'll need about 2 more weeks of it.
Oh, good.
Oh, goody. Okay, dear.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Paul from Saginaw, MI. Repetitive activity, can that relieve depression? Hi, Paul.
Hey, Dr. Ray. Long time no hear.
I haven't heard from you. You used to call and ask questions that were of substance, of broad-based connections. And this is one of them.
Workshop questions.
Where did you get this? Oh, yeah, sure. Sure, I still
do. You still practicing your Hammond B3?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, right now I play in the nursing homes. I play in the nursing homes. Don't have to worry about fights breaking out.
I do that, too. Have you ever practiced on a Barton movie theater organ that goes up and down on an elevator?
No, I never have. Man, that thing's got too many.
You haven't lived until you did that.
Now, did you play
in Barton movie theater organs, haven't you?
Yeah. Did you play in restaurants and sleazy lounges like I did?
No, I didn't.
See, I did
just
for about
nursing homes and VFWs and American Legion and stuff like that.
Oh, man, I used to play. I played for 8 or 10 years in restaurants and bar-type settings, and that was back when everybody had an organ in the place. Well, now they don't have organs anymore. That's just the organs are long since gone. But I do play at the nursing homes. And I'm old enough, I play the old standards, and a lot of the ladies, and that's predominantly 80% ladies there, they recognize those tunes.
Yep. Well, hey, since we're talking about practicing, my topic is repetitive motion and depression. In your opinion, can practicing repetitive motion relieve depression, such as playing music over and over or being in a batting cage and swinging over and over? Can any of that stuff help relieve depression? And do you guys prescribe some kind of thing like that?
Well, first of all, you got to decide what kind of depression. All right. If it's a biochemically based depression, no, not going to do it. All right. You're going to need medication, or sometimes the passage of time will lift the depression. The bulk of depressions are either situational or the way you think, or the ruts you've gotten yourself into. Given that, the repetitive motion depends upon what kind and for what purpose. Let's say, for example, you decide you're going to go play the organ because you're feeling low and blue and you're playing tunes and you're finding that I feel better. Well, is it the fact that you're playing the actual motoric movement of your hands, or is it that it's bringing back memories, or Song Sung Blue by Neil Diamond, you get the feeling good before you know it, that kind of thing? If you say the repetitive motion is exercise, jogging, well, there's research that says, yeah, jogging can help depression. It can do those things. Or weightlifting, repetitive weightlifting. There's indication that, yeah, that'll do it. So I guess it really comes down to, what are you repeating?
Right.
Now,
I worked in mental health before I retired, and I had a consumer that he would put on shirts, long sleeve shirts, that had a zipper in the front, not buttons, and he would play with that zipper up and down for hours and hours until he broke it. And he was calm, collected, and he loved it. And then when we couldn't find a shirt with a zipper, we gave him a shirt with buttons, and then he would button those buttons up and down for hours and hours, and he was calm as could be, because normally he was could be trouble at times.
What was his diagnosis?
He was diagnosed schizophrenic.
Okay.
And but here's something that we learned later.
You have to make it quick, Paul. You got about 20 seconds.
Well, some kind of drug ingestion caused his mental problems.
Oh, okay. Well, given what you said, that kind of repetitive, compulsive sort of behavior was probably a sign of the schizophrenia, and it was calming to him because it took away anxiety.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is the Evidences for Christianity. Some people will say that religion is personal and therefore outside the purview of objective examination. As Christians, we cherish the feelings and impressions we get from having a personal relationship with God. So how do we know such feelings and impressions are trustworthy? St. Paul says to test everything. And how do we test subjective feelings? A well-formed conscience is a start, but how do we properly form our conscience? Again, St. Paul writes, "Study to show yourself approved, rightly interpreting the word of truth." And what is the foundation of that truth? How about the historical facts, archaeological evidences, and the logical reasons that established the Church of Jesus Christ? To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Is the ecclesial ministry of the Catholic Church personal as well as sacramental and collegial in character? The Catechism says yes. Jesus Christ, the founder of the Catholic Church, calls his ministers personally when he says, "Follow me." The College of Bishops are related to the Pontiff in Rome as Peter was related to the rest of the apostles. When Christ instituted the 12 apostles, he constituted them in a college or permanent assembly at the head of which he placed Peter, the rock of his church. Our Lord gave Peter the keys to his church, designating him the shepherd of the whole flock. The power Christ gave Peter to loose and to bind was also given to the College of the Apostles, united to its head. This pastoral office of Peter and the other apostles belongs to the church's very foundation and is continued by the bishops under the primacy of the Pope. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Thank you for joining me. There is room for your calls, 877-573-7825. You can call at any time during the program and have a pretty consistent chance of getting on the air. Let's go to an anonymous caller from New York with a question that I am now getting in droves, which 15 years ago I never had, well, virtually any. How are you?
Hi, how are you, Dr. Ray?
Okay, sir. So your teenage, your preteen daughter, what's 12, 13, 11?
12.
Okay. She's telling folks and, that she believes she's bisexual.
Yes, it was on a blog. We happened to look at her blog with some of her friends. I think this was a private one. It seemed that maybe she had asked someone else out and she says it was not a girl. And then someone has asked her out, and she said that she's bi. And we were debating whether to even talk to her about it, that we had seen it on her blog. But we have talked to her about it. And I tried to remain calm and said, "I'm pretty 99% sure that you're not. And this is just way too early to even tell." But we're wondering, what is the best way to handle this?
Well, the first best way to handle it, you answered. What is she doing with a smartphone? There is evidence and indication, especially Instagram and places like that, that particularly for the young kids, the adolescents, pre-adolescents, that it is celebrated and applauded that you come out as either bisexual or with sexual confusion. This is not to say that none of these children are sexually confused, because some of them are, but that this is a factor in causing this kind of confusion. There's also indication that by the end of the teen years, many of these young ladies, a high percentage of them, return to their basic sexual orientation of birth. In the meantime, they are socially influenced, some more than others, to do this. It's becoming very common, very common. I hope we start to look at these social factors, and we just don't assume that every child who says, this is my attraction, this is what I want, this is who I am, automatically, genetically, is in that direction. So I think very likely that your daughter, well, I can't know. I don't know your daughter. But, what do you say, she's 12?
Yes.
How long has she had a smartphone that has access to every piece of sewage in the whole world?
She's had it a while, but this problem is, it's more due to school and the remote learning. So she has to do so much of her homework online. So really, this was happening on the computer.
Right, and she's not online.
A big difference.
Yeah, she's not online. Well, she's online, but she's not doing her schoolwork.
Exactly. So she has to get online to do her schoolwork, and then once she's online, she drifts.
Right, of course.
And well, they have the whole class is in this blog.
You've got two options.
It pings every couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. Her peers are telling her how to think. Her peers are telling her how to think.
Yeah.
And if she wants to be cool, she can think that way. You have several options. One, you put that computer exactly where you can see it, and there is no way she goes anywhere other than schoolwork, and you're going to have to supervise it. Are they still in New York, not in school?
Some are in school and some are not, depending on where you are.
Okay. So. Don't get me started. Do not get me started on the hideous unintended effects of the way we've handled this. And school kids is one of the big ones. I have a teacher friend of mine who says that her kids coming back to school are so far behind. She teaches second grade. She says some of them don't have the skills of kindergartners. She said she has never had this happen before because they were at home and they were unsupervised and they just kind of drifted. They didn't do the schoolwork. It's just the unintended invisible effects have been massive, especially given the risk to children, which is very, 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 very low. All right, I digress. I would also, I have relatives whose children have to do their schoolwork online on their Chromebook or whatever it is they have. And they have paired they have paired that Chromebook to either their phone or their own iPad. They've paired it. And as a result, they know every single place, every single thing. There is no way I would allow that girl to go anywhere other than her schoolwork. And if she does, I'm going to respond with some pretty significant punishments. That's me. Because you can already see, if indeed she is not predisposed to some kind of same-sex attraction. And basically, a lot of times when kids say they're bisexual at that age, what they're really saying is, well, I don't know, I'll just kind of try anything. I mean, you know, it's kind of all whatever, anything goes. There's a lot of that. I had a high-profile friend of mine whose son was in high school, and he told his dad, he said, about 60% of the kids, his informal assessment, that they say you have to try everything to know what you are. So when you have those kind of anecdotal stories, and they're all over the place, by the way, you're dealing with, and I would sit down with your daughter and say, okay, how did you decide this? How did you come to this conclusion that you're not sure if you're attracted to boys or to girls? Tell me how this happened. And there's no doubt in my mind, well, I got to say doubt because I can't know, but my guess is that there's a lot going on that blog that that she's getting confused by.
Yeah.
My suggestion there, Dad.
There's been a number of other girls on that blog over the past year that have said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, it is. It's becoming a very...
gender.
It's becoming a new social movement, especially among adolescent girls. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there would be more attention paid to this. I think in the future, there is going to be more attention paid to this, but right now, it's as though it's not even a factor. It's not even something to consider when obviously it is, common sense tells you it is, anecdotal evidence tells you it is, and now there's even indication through surveys that in fact social media has a massive influencing effect on these young kids.
So would you pull her out of or forbid or shut
her
blog?
I would.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes.
That's her connection to a lot of people.
Well, the problem with the connection is, it's like the old, I read Playboy because I like the interviews. You know, the problem with connection is there's bad connection and good connection. If it's a bad connection, then it's better than, then it's worse than no connection. But you got to decide that as a parent. This is Dr. Ray, 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number to call. I want to hear from you. As I said, still got time.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I'm operating on the gifts of the Holy Spirit when I don't feel well, even when I'm annoyed, when I'm down and out. During my recovery from an automobile accident, immense numbers of people wrote to me and sent me emails, 50,000. And they told me how helpful they thought my talks on EWTN were to them. I'm delighted. But I want you to know, I'm nobody's fool. The talks that were helpful, the sentences that were helpful, the phrases that were helpful, came from the Holy Spirit. That's the work of the Holy Spirit. And the Styrofoam packaging came from me. I did that. And Styrofoam doesn't amount to very much.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
I tell oftentimes an experience that I had at Divine Child when I was a young priest, 1 year ordained. First time I ever really saw the power of the Blessed Sacrament. And we simply exposed the Blessed Sacrament at the end of Mass one night. I encouraged people. I said, you know what? We've been in the habit of praying over people after Mass. I said, we're not going to do that this week. I'm just going to invite people to come on up and pray if they want to pray. And I put the Blessed Sacrament on the altar. I kneel down. As I kneel down, the church is in the sanctuary. The whole church. And as I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the people there, and I'm looking at Jesus under the appearance of bread there, I saw the Lord standing on the altar. And he's just standing there looking out at all the people. And then at a certain point, he turned towards me, and he just bowed. And he says, don't you see how easy this is? You don't have to do anything. You just have to put me out. You put me out, and I will work.
Nothing better than brush cymbals and cool bass viol. On to 88s. That's music talk. That's what you talk like when you play out in clubs. Bass viol and 88s. Thank you for joining me here. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. 88. I think of Teresa Tomeo. No, she's not that old. I think not for another year or two. Anyway. I had one lady tell me, if you keep talking about Teresa's, well, actually, no, she did tell me. She said, I told you not to tease Teresa about her age. She did tell me that. She said, I told you not. She was at a talk. And I saw her again at another talk, and she said, you didn't listen to me. I will never listen to you again. I thought, wow. Which is interesting because she decided I shouldn't do that. Teresa and I have a ball with her. We have a lot of fun, and she teases me about it. I think it's great. Teresa's a dear friend of mine. She's a lot, and she's younger than I am, too. That's the only reason I tease her. But this lady decided I was not behaving as she would like, and that was it. Okie dokie. Let's see. Joe. It says Joe Orr. Joe Orr who? No, Joe Oregon. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Dr. A.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks for taking my call.
What's up?
Well, I had a question for you, so, and I want your advice. So I was I had my 7-year-old daughter had a sleepover this past weekend, and with a family friends of ours, and they have one daughter that's 8 and one daughter that's 7 that stayed the night, and they packed up their toys and stuff, and they had one of the girls had brought a tablet over, and my kids we don't really give our kids tablets. They've played I don't know if I can say this, but they played a Game Boy, so that's got the name Boy in it. But
we'll let you slide. They're going to change that. Hey, Joe, thanks. They're going to change it in a couple of weeks. Don't worry about it.
All right. Thanks for that. So, but we never, I never really was introduced to a tablet before, but they were playing this game, and it was, I kind of got the gist of it, kind of looked at it a little bit. It was a wolf pack. It seems like a bunch of kids can kind of log on, and each one's a wolf, and they got to go around and eat farm animals. And they were using language kind of like, oh, kill the chickens and kill the cows. And I was kind of listening a little bit in the background, I guess, kind of doing my thing. But and then they started using the word murder and stuff like that. And, you know, while the girls were here, too, they used a lot of, like, the OMG words and stuff. And it's just stuff that doesn't fly in our household normally, kind of language. And I didn't know how much to intervene. You know, I don't want to be the household that, oh, I don't want to go to their house because, you know.
Why not, really Joe? Joe, why not?
Well, for one, they probably wouldn't want to come over again, maybe, if they can't bring their tablets and kind of have all these rules. And then maybe they, you know, they want my daughter to go over to their house all the time or something like that instead of come to our house. And two, just like their family friends, too. So I don't know what their kids would say to their parents, I guess.
You bring up about 5 points here, Joe. The first one is the broadest point, which is you have to be much more careful about where you let your little 7-year-old go for sleepovers. It's that simple. You can't assume that other people have your supervision and your values. Second point, you're not out of line if you say to yourself, I don't want my daughter at age 7 in her sweet innocence to be exposed to that. Why would I do that?
Oh, come on, Joe. That's what kids do now. That's the kind of stuff they do. You can't protect them.
Well, yes, I can. That's why I'm her father. She's going to be exposed to the ugliness of the world in time. I don't want it to be at age 7 as much as possible. That's the second thing. Third thing, you have every right to say, no, guys, that game's not gone here. Now, I don't know if that was at your house, Joe, or at hers. If it was at hers, I probably would have, and I was there. I probably would have pulled my daughter away right then and there and said, honey, I don't want you playing that. And if you're thinking, that's going to embarrass people, you know, it's going to embarrass our family friends, they're going to think I'm the policeman. Well, they're teaching you something. They're teaching you that they are not as cautious about their child's innocence as you are. And I think it's very hard to be overcautious with a child's innocence. Our culture has gotten to the point. I've got a book out called Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World. And I talk about how all of this influences the worldliness of our children, how they're getting misshapen so early. And one of the reasons is we parents are afraid to step in and say, no, not going to happen here. So, Joe, if it were me, I probably think long and hard before I let her go overnight at that friend's house again. But that's me. And I'm getting to the point where I don't like, my kids are grown now, but even when they were growing up, I do not like somebody deciding what they can see at their age. I don't. I may be in the bottom 2% of what's allowable, and I don't care because it's my kid. So there. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that.
You were afraid? What do you mean afraid?
Well, I mean, makes sense, but just you know.
And you know, Joe, why I have such strong opinions about this? Because of the world I live in. Because I get parents of 10, 11, and 12-year-olds coming into my office all the time. And they're saying to me, why are they like this? Why are they thinking this way? What has happened? And then I find out that along the way, bit by bit, by piece, they surrendered to the culture's pace. And so now this little 10-year-old is not a little 10-year-old anymore. This little 10-year-old has seen and heard so much sewage and stuff. And the thing of it is, it isn't just their innocence that's gone, Joe. It's that they have decided maybe mom and dad aren't so smart about this religion thing either. So be strong, Joe. Be strong. Be her protector.
So then, when they are over, should I intervene and kind of just stop or take away the tablet? Or?
Oh, yeah, no tablets when they're there.
Perfect.
You know, you're allowed to, like, do really weird things, like talk to each other and play games and do different stuff. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Ray, come on, Dr. Ray. This, what are you, Amish? They have tablets now. That's what they do for entertainment.
Yeah, if you can guarantee that it's going to be a nice little wholesome kind of thing. But the fact that that little girl friend of your daughter's at age 8, plays those games as a matter of routine tells me that there are other games she's playing too, and that ain't the only one.
And I know there's other problems too, because I've heard the adults say one time, like, oh, where'd you get that? And they talk to other people and on the tablet. And you don't know who it is. It could be an adult.
That's right.
Whatever.
You can almost assume.
I know there were some problems with him saying, like, oh, where did you hear that, you know?
See what I mean? You're answering my questions for me. You know that they are not in any way along the same wavelength as you are as a parent. Well,
right.
Maybe
I thought
not.
It was pretty crazy. I'd be like, whoa. Yeah. I'd throw that thing in the garbage immediately.
There you go. Well, don't be afraid to follow your instincts.
Bye. Okay? Thanks, Dr. Ray.
All right, Joe. Good luck. This is Dr. A. I hope, in the words of Douglas MacArthur, I shall return.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
If you have sustained conversation with non-Catholic Christians, one of the things that always comes up is, why do you confess to a priest? Why would you go to a priest when you can go straight to God? I would say, well, look, I went to Jesus, I looked at his word, and it told me to go to a priest. It is interesting, one of the first things you notice right towards the end of the Gospel of John, that Jesus himself determined to forgive and retain sins through human intermediaries. If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained. And Jesus commissioned his apostles on earth to speak in his name, to forgive sins or retain sins, not just metaphorically, but metaphysically.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta, 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
If I do not get to your call, please call back. You will be first up on any future show that you call back on. Lynn, Denver, Colorado. Hi, Lynn.
Hey, Dr. Ray. Thanks for taking my call. Make it quick. Basically, it's been really crazy, you know, with the whole COVID thing, working remote, working in person, and my workload has gotten exponential. and I've got two supervisors, but it's almost like I'm being caught out, like, doing wrong instead of being supported, and I'm like, I can't deal with it anymore. So we had a meeting yesterday that didn't go horrendously bad, but badly, but I just feel like I need to, like, I want to make the first move to, like, just, here's what I need, here's all the work that I do, I let my work speak for itself. But there's a person that's there is retiring, and I think they're a little bit nervous about handing over the helm. And it's almost like cutting me down at the knees so that I, you know, am in doubt of my ability or capability, almost a passive aggressive that, you know, what you're doing is really important. And if you don't do it right, you know, a lot of people are going to be counting on you, and we can't let this go. So it's this really strange situation. I work all the time. Like 6:40 in the morning, sending emails to like 9 o'clock at night, missing dinners with my family, working on weekends. I do everything I can. I'm grateful for my job. I love what I get to do. But I just feel in my heart, it's just not, I'm just not being heard or supported.
What do they think is wrong with you?
I think part of it is probably me thinking this thing's wrong with me. I'm very sensitive about stuff because I give 110%. I don't know. The thing is that I'll go to meetings. I'm representing our group. And the way that it is I go and work with all different programs and projects that we work with, and I have to come and back and report, get the party line before I go back and talk to them. But then there's this disconnect where I don't get feedback internally before I work with my external partners. So I'm really stuck in the middle here. And so when I try to, like, you know, state that, it goes into a micro piece. Well, you know, you wrote too long of this draft. You need to be more precise and specific.
All right.
Where,
okay.
You know, it's getting in the
Lynn.
I can't know
whether you stink at your job or whether you don't.
No, okay. You know, I've got a lot of people. I'm not an ego person, so I wouldn't say I'm awesome. No, I work really hard. I do good work, and I meet the integrity to do what you're supposed to do.
All right. Are you saying what are you asking? Are you saying should I quit?
Well. You know, that was actually part of it. I'm getting up there. You know, I'm thinking, this is like, you know, God's way of telling me I should look into retirement, do something else, less stressful, more family time. I don't obviously want to quit, but I put so much effort into it. I guess what I would like to do is we had like this kind of like fraught meeting, and I'm not one just to kind of like, okay, be pissed and, you know, never think, not going to ever get better. I'd love to take the first step.
All right,
like,
let me jump in here.
Yeah.
You're working 15 hours a day to the neglect of your family, and apparently – during those 15 hours, there's things you're doing they don't like. And they're either trying to straighten you out or they're trying to move you out. I can't know. But if it were me and I'm working 15 hours a day and they're telling me you're falling short, I'm starting to really think seriously about other options, whatever it is. If that is the scenario, and if you're saying, well, I got to get them to understand, I'm not sure you will. If working 15 hours a day, you're either working very inefficiently or you're working very hard, but it still isn't what they want. And if that's the case, you have to ask yourself, well, I can't work 18 hours a day. So I'm going to decide how much do I want to sacrifice everything else in my life for this job that I'm putting in 60, 70 hours a week, neglecting the people I love for negative feedback. See, that's really what you got to ask. And if you're saying, yeah, but I don't know what I'll do if I don't work there, I mean, I need the money. Well, if it's that bad, if you need that money that bad, then you just better swallow it and let them critique you and do the best you can. If you don't need the money that bad, then you say to yourself, I really don't need this. So I got other options. And if you're saying, you implied there for a sentence or two there, Lynn, that you're getting close to retirement anyway. So as I always tell this to folks that I consult with on job situations. I believe you can never do the very best you can at a job unless you're willing to walk away from it. You can extrapolate that to negotiations. Unless you're willing to walk away from that negotiation, you'll never get the best terms that you can get. Thank you, Lynn. For those of you who didn't get on the air, please call back. And I know we have one gentleman up there who did send me an email, and I remember the email. And matter of fact, I had it on my list to deal with on E-Person Monday. So you call back, you will be first up. I'm looking at about 20 seconds left in the program. I thank you for joining me here, and I thanks Andrew Krucek, and I thanks Eric Dumont. Between the two of them, they got four chillins, four little chillins, too. What's Audra Rose? Is she 10 now, Andrew? Is she that old? She 20? Wow, she's 20. Oh, no, that means 20 seconds. Sorry. Thanks for joining me, everybody. I appreciate it. This is Dr. A. Walk with God. Hold your kids tightly by the hand. And thanks to you folks in Kentucky, Louisville, St. Louis Bertrand, great place.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.